JC Corcoran Podcast.
I was in love with a girl on marijuana. She said, if I'm not stoned, I don't wanna. But she got so paranoid, her place I would avoid. I was in love with a girl on marijuana. I was in love with a girl on cocaine. She had everything going but her brain. We'd talk endlessly for hours, but by morning it'd go sour. I was in love with a girl on cocaine. Through ecstasy, crystal meth and glue, I found no drug compares to you. All these pills, all this weed, I don't know just what I need. I was in love with a girl on LSD. She'd see things I'd never see. She broadened her perspective. Then I got more selective. I was in love with a girl on LSD. Through ecstasy, crystal meth, and glue, I found no drug compares to you. All these pills, all this weed, I don't know what I need. I was in love with a girl who drank beer till bad breath and all, she disappeared. She was blowing up real bad, but when she left, I was still sad. I was in love with a girl that drank beer. I was in love with a girl on China Way. We were married for a year one night. Her memory still lingers, 'cause I burned all my fingers. I was in love with a girl on China Way. With a girl who drank coffee. There's times when I couldn't keep her off me. That caffeine got her going, but her ugly side was showing. I was in love with a girl who drank coffee. I was in love with a girl who was a dealer. I was afraid somebody'd come and steal her. We never used to fight, but the phone rang day and night. I was in love with a girl who was a dealer. Sure as hell, she got popped by the big guys.
Now I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest disc jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
Thursday, February 16th, 2023. Only 42 days now until opening day. How you doing, kids? You are at jconline.com. Flakes, wind, cold. You wake up tomorrow morning, 22 degrees, and that's in the city. The outlier is going to be worse than that. Got Mardi Gras coming up this weekend. Could be a little on the brisk side. We shall see. Where do I start? How about the gas station shooting over there in north part of the city there, sort of just a little north of the Post-Dispatch? I know that area pretty well because for a long time, Channel 30 was there, and I would do some things occasionally over there. But also, the river and the point were in that building too. Right across from the Post-Dispatch and also just a little bit south, like a block south of that McDonald's, and then just a block north of that is where the gas station shooting happened. And I could tell you stories from now until the cows come home about that area. Let me tell you a little story. So we were working at the river, and like I said, on the other side of the wall was the point, and Channel 30 was downstairs. Now, we had a parking lot attendant. I wish I could remember this guy's name, a black guy. Oh, my God. I remember this guy's name. Oh, he was a riot. He was hired by the people. We shared a parking lot with the Post-Dispatch. So it was the Post, Channel 30, the point, and the river. And then this guy was from some sort of security firm or something, and it was his job to make sure that the cars were not getting broken into, because the cars were always getting broken into. I still remember this guy. Is that we had a program director for a while, some guy out of Texas, and his name was Catfish. And I asked him several times what his real name was, and he didn't want to tell me. That tells me he had problems with the law somewhere along the line. But his name was Catfish, and we had to address him as Catfish. So one day, and it's, you know, it really is hard to take somebody seriously. I mean, if you're the overnight jock or 7 to midnight or something and your name is Catfish, that's cool. But if you're the boss, just think about it. If you have to send him a memo, is it Mr. Catfish at that point? I don't know. And he seemed like a decent guy, but he didn't know what he was doing. I don't even think he had ever programmed a radio station before. And at that particular place, they were doing that all the time. The management team basically came from television. They did not understand radio. They had no idea how radio worked. And so frequently we were stuck working for people who had no experience. And I don't know, they talked a good game somehow in a job application. I don't have the slightest idea, but we were surrounded by incompetence. So anyhow, Catfish is walking out to his car one evening. It was one of those times of the year where it's like, you know, 5:36 in the evening. The sun was just beginning to set. And as he's walking out to his car, it's a big parking lot, a really, really big parking lot. And so he's walking along. And he is like, I think I parked right over here. Wait a minute. Why is my dome light on? He sees his car and he sees his dome light on. And he gets closer to the car. He sees the front door is wide open. And as he gets closer and closer, he sees some legs hanging out of the car. Some dude is trying to hotwire his car. So he starts screaming in an attempt to run the guy off. And the guy did jump up and run away. But then this security guard, I want to say his name might have been Charles. The security guard goes, "Why did you yell? I could have shot him." Okay, in your world, that's how you would have handled it. Okay, but the even better story than that, and people were always getting shot in that McDonald's parking lot or in that gas station. So the story from 2 days ago was somebody getting shot there. It's like, yeah, well, I guess you got to do it as a news story, but this has been going on for 30 years in that parking lot. But we had one sales guy. We had a guy in the management team over there at Channel 30, the Point, the River, who was a big shot with CBS Sports. He was the guy that would go to the Olympics and tell them where to put the cameras and stuff like that. What he was doing in this group of people, I don't have the slightest idea. And he was a decent guy, but he frequently had to go out of town. So one of the sales gals at the radio station said, I've watched houses before and they liked her and the whole thing. Can you feed the animals? They'll take care of the plants. We're going to be gone for a week. Sure. No problem whatsoever. Very nice, very pretty girl, a sales girl by the name of Julie. She figures I can handle this. So she, on the way to work that morning, loads up her car with all of her necessities and everything she's going to need for the next week, because she's not going to be staying at her place. She's going to be staying at Frank's place. And so it's a Friday evening and work is done, and she just drives a couple of feet across the street from the parking lot over to that gas station, gets a full tank of gas, goes in to pay for it, and when she comes back, the car is gone. So not only is her car gone, not only are all of her possessions gone, now she's supposed to house sit, and she doesn't even have a car. They found the car just outside of Las Vegas, if my memory serves me correctly, and I think it does. That sort of stuff happens more than you think. Remember that bar? I think it started out as 64 West, and then it became, I think they called it Rupert. Yeah, Rupert's after that. And place was a, you know, swinging hot spot there for a while. And we had two friends, Marianne and Tim. They were good friends of ours. And they were from, she was from St. Louis. He was from Kansas City. And they decided they were going to live in Kansas City. So, but they were always buzzing back and forth from Kansas City to St. Louis constantly. Like every other weekend, they'd be in town because they had all these relatives here. And they also, because of that, carried a lot of stuff in the car because they were doing, you know, weekend trips. They're doing the valet parking thing. They do the valet parking thing at Rupert's 64 West, whichever it was at that time. And they come outside of the bar. They hand the valet guy the ticket. They're standing around chit-chatting, and people are coming and going. There's lots of cars, a big line of cars as the valet guys line them up, and people jump inside. Unfortunately, in this particular case, somebody other than Marianne and Tim jumped inside the car and took off with it. They're standing there, and they watch a guy get in the car and drive away with it, and nobody could stop them. I forget where they ended up finding that car. Of course, now they don't even want the car. They just want the catalytic converter. I don't know if you saw that the other day. I think we did the story a couple of days ago. Somewhere, the Wienermobile was hanging around it. It might have been at the Super Bowl down in Arizona. And somebody stole the catalytic converter off the Wienermobile. Jeez, is there nothing sacred? Oh, and one little piece of fallout from football. Tom Brady developing a scripted series on the life of John Madden. Here's the quote. I love John's passion for the game, especially his insatiable appetite for educating audiences about football, end quote. Wow. If just somebody in the entertainment community did a decent John Madden imitation.
Now, the obvious question is, you must have been in the presence of John Madden at some point.
No, he won't come near me. He doesn't like me.
Really? Yeah. So he doesn't like this at all.
Yeah, you know, Frank is at the Funny Bone in Fairview Heights, and I would never go see. I hate him that much.
My manager went up to him one time at the Super Bowl and goes, what do you think of this guy who does the wonderful John Madden?
I don't like it.
What do you mean you don't like
it? I don't like it, and I should have been Shrek.
And then he went off.
You know, be a green guy that's not the Hulk and still get Cameron Diaz. Boom, I mean, that's an unbelievable day.
Well, no, he has no sense of humor.
No, I guess not. It's a, you know, he's a football coach, a former football coach. You know, that's, they're used to being respected and stuff like that. And when Kimmel brought me on, when I first was doing the NFL on Fox before I got the segment after Jimmy, they would always get mad when I was doing that because Mad would call and be upset about it.
So he went that far.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah, I've got word that there's some stuff that he's even gotten in the written into the video game now that people, if they work on that video game, that they can't have me as part of their shows and stuff. It's pretty
wild. Holy mackerel.
Yeah, you know, that's the magnitude of what this is. And, you know, Frank says things that people think that are me, and it's not me, and that's not a good thing.
Now, a couple of things about that, actually. They made peace. I think some of the people at Fox are like, he's not doing this to ridicule you. He's doing it because it's funny. And eventually Madden came around and picked him up in a golf cart once somewhere and just said, hey, Frank. So they made up. And also, I saw Frank about a year ago. He was doing a comedy club just outside of Tampa, and I went to the show, and I dropped him a little line ahead of time and said, hey, you know, after the show, let's spend a little time together. So we hung out a little bit after the show. But, you know, he's one of those guys, a lot of comedians do this, some don't, but a lot do. They come out into the lobby or into the parking lot after the show and just sort of hang out, sign autographs, take selfies, and he's one of those guys. Frank is a wonderful guy. He really is a good guy. What Tom Brady sounds like he wants to be some sort of television producer or something. Well, who says he can't do it, right? Speaking of television, this is monumental. This is really big. For the first time ever, adults in the United States will spend more time watching digital content on platforms like Netflix, TikTok, and YouTube, more so than traditional TV. Linear TV, as they call it, in 2023 will average about 3 hours a day. Digital video watching, 3 hours and 11 minutes. Netflix and YouTube are leading the way when it comes to digital viewing. People are watching about 33 minutes each day, and TikTok viewing among adults is climbing sharply. One analyst says the lines between social media and entertainment have blurred, and TikTok is now coming for the bigger screen video players. Bad timing, as our government officials, based on information that we know that the Chinese are using TikTok as a way to harvest information about Americans. And there's pretty much widespread speculation that TikTok is going to be made unavailable to Americans. And it is interesting. If you saw that 60 Minutes piece about a month ago, where they were talking about the fact that in China, they get a different version of TikTok. It's much more restricted, as is everything in China, but they're taking care of their own people because the time is limited and the sorts of stuff that's on there is limited. And it's harder for people who have ulterior motives or are just creepy in general. It's harder for them to get their stuff on TikTok. Whereas here in the United States, they give us a United States version of TikTok where none of those safeguards or guardrails or whatever you want to call them are present. And they're like, have fun destroying your culture, everybody. So I think they're going to wipe out TikTok and, you know, something else will come up. Somebody will develop something to take its place. But if you're a TikTok aficionado, I'd look for some way to start weaning myself off of it very, very soon. Netflix doing a documentary on that website you tell all of your female friends you've never heard of. That, of course, being Pornhub. Bob Odenkirk's new series called Lucky Hank looks really good from the people who have seen it. I got the trailer here. I'm going to put it on my Facebook page, The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran, later on today. Peacock has renewed Poker Face for a second season. And now let's talk about this because I'm telling you, I am not backing off from this. Now, the good news is that I'd say about 90% of the people who read this last night on my Facebook page understood it, agreed with me, told me so, and really said, yeah, I mean, this is sort of like a controversial stance that you've taken, sort of a position that is unusual, but we understand what you're saying here and we agree with it. It's that 10%. It's that 10%. I'm going to give you an example. Last year when Roe v. Wade got shot down, I got talking about the fact that it's going to be a real fight. It's been one, but it's really turning into a fight. And the women's movement would be very, very smart to get as many men involved in the reaction to Roe v. Wade being shot down. It would be a really, really good idea if the women who are sort of spearheading this whole thing got as much male support as possible. Because then, well, first of all, raw numbers. It's like they say, strength in numbers, strength in numbers. So it just means you got more people on your side, which is always good. And then when it comes to election time, that's more people. It doesn't matter if the person voting is male or female on an issue like this. You need bodies. You need bodies. And so if you can get as many men behind you, because anybody who would argue that the implications of the pulling apart of Roe v. Wade, anybody who tries to say that that's just a women's issue, that's not a logical position. Childbirth, custody, divorce rate, the economics of having a child, all sorts of stuff. You think that just affects women? Of course it affects men. It affects women more, but it still definitely affects men. Well, you wouldn't believe the amount of pushback that I got over that statement. We don't need men. We don't need men to do this. I'm like, whatever, go ahead, disagree with me. And then when it's on the ballot in some state and you don't have enough votes, remember what I said. So with regard to Raquel Welch yesterday, you know, one of the things about Raquel Welch is that in all the years that she was in the entertainment industry, well, let me put it this way. Right now, I think that Paige Speranic and Emily Ratajkowski are the two most stunning women that we have on Earth right now. Paige Speranic, the golf goddess. My God, is that woman attractive? And you talk about the total package. She does have a very large head. I will say that. But beautiful and just in shape and athletic and just the best. God, she's attractive. There's some people who don't think so. There's some people who think that that giant head produces a slightly manly persona. I disagree, but again, like I said, there's some people who disagree with me that she is one of the most beautiful people on Earth. The other one is Emily Ratajkowski. Now, Emily Ratajkowski,
admittedly has an odd profile, and because of that, some people don't think that she is as pretty as a lot of people say. I happen to think you're crazy if you say that. For God's sakes, just don't look at her from the side. But like I said, there are some people who disagree with me and don't think that she is as pretty as a lot of people say. The thing about Raquel Welch, I never heard anybody say she wasn't one of the most beautiful women on earth. I never heard anybody say, well, yeah, maybe, I don't know, not really, I don't think she's that hot. No, no, no. Nobody ever, those words never crossed the lips of any red-blooded American male, I can tell you that. I think most women felt the same way. She came very, very close to getting the job of Marianne on Gilligan's Island. There's even pictures, I could dig them up, I know I have them somewhere in my archives here, of her in the little Marianne outfit, you know, the blue and white, you know, checkered shirt, you know, tied at the midriff, and then the little shorts. She's actually in that Marianne outfit. I think what happened is that she ended up getting a movie role or something, so she went that way, and then they got the other actors to play Marianne on Gilligan's Island. But here's the thing I'm getting at. And again, there's critical thinking involved here, because you can just go along with the pack, or you can say to yourself, well, no, wait a minute, I think JC's got a point here, and I am not fucking backing off from this. You know why? Because I know I'm right. Because what I'm about to say, for the most part, aren't even opinions. They're not opinions. They're facts. So what's been happening for the last couple of years is that people have been posting these gorgeous pictures of Raquel Welch. Just, I mean, she's just knockout. And people are like, can you believe it? You know, she's like 80, 81, 82 right now. Can you believe how beautiful she still is? And I would look at the pictures too and go, wow, I don't know how she's doing that. Those are some really, really super genes that she got there. Well, then a funny thing happened. About a year or so ago, somebody posted some real pictures of Raquel Welch. It was like going to the grocery store or something. And again, not my opinion, fact, okay? Fact. She was somewhat heavy. Her boobs were like at her waist. There was one particular shot where she was turned to the side a little bit and her sleeves were rolled up and her arms were very, very, and I mean extremely visibly wrinkled. And I'm thinking to myself, they've been lying to us all along. Whoever's been putting up these pictures is putting up pictures of her from 15, 20 years ago. What she looks like now is an 82-year-old woman. And the entire purpose of the post was to point out the fact that they've been lying to us about this, and she looks like any other 82-year-old woman. Now, there are 82-year-old women who look sensational. And again, you get good genes, you take care of yourself, you don't smoke, stuff like that over the many, many years as you're leading up to that point in your life, and you can come out looking better than some other people. And I know women who are approaching 80 who look pretty darn good. But that's the entire point. Instead, you know, Raquel Welch, instead of being like one of those people like Joan Rivers or, oh my God, Priscilla Presley looks like a Madame Tussauds wax figure, she's had so much plastic surgery. And you end up, you know, being 80 years old and looking like a freak. Raquel Welch said, fuck that, I'm 82, deal with it. And she was absolutely entitled to look that way. She simply grew old in a dignified manner, now with a bunch of surgeries and other phoniness. You know, this country is really messed up sometimes, you know. We won't even allow people to age gracefully and naturally. Oh, you're supposed to be beautiful. You have to be beautiful. Therefore, you go see yourself a plastic surgeon and get all that cleaned up and get that skin pulled back and ladle the makeup on. And God damn it, this is what we want. This is what we need. This is what we demand. And Raquel is like, fuck it. I'm 82. Deal with it. I just think to myself, I'm looking at these pictures of her and thinking, wow, maybe now she'll finally find some peace. Well, believe it or not, like I said, it's that 10% who don't only disagree with you, but then start hurling names at you. Misogyny, sexism, you're a pig. And all I could think of, well, yeah, well, you're stupid because you didn't even understand what I was doing. I'm defending her. I'm defending a woman's right to age. Martin Mull used to tell a joke. He'd say, you know, it's really unfair and it's a real shame. As men grow older, they have a tendency to look like, you know, Sean Connery. But as women grow old, they have a tendency to look like Sean Connery. Okay, you know, hearty har. By the way, I always tell women who will confide in me that they don't like the wrinkles in their face. And I always say, don't, those are not wrinkles. That's experience. You wouldn't believe the way some women's eyes light up when they hear me say that. But to be defending somebody and then be accused of misogyny and sexism, like I said, this world is really, really screwed up sometimes. Here on the podcast, we only talk about politics when it's absolutely unavoidable. And this is that moment. Nikki Haley running to help Donald Trump. That's what some people say. Some people say the way they have this broken down is that this about, you know, 30 to 35% of Republicans who will never, ever leave Donald Trump under any circumstances. They will never leave him under any circumstances. That's about half the party. The other half of the party is the more, hard to say a progressive Republican, but you know what I mean. And the people who tend to have more education, Republicans who have a tendency to focus more on, instead of these wedge issues and all these cultural wars, tend to focus more on the basic principles of conservatives, which is small government, big defense, making sure the business community and corporations are taken care of, that sort of stuff. And that's who Nikki Haley is trying to appeal to. The only problem is there's going to be a bunch of candidates. Nobody out-Trumps Trump, okay? Nobody's going to even be in that neighborhood. Even Ron DeSantis. He's like Trump without the bizarre and illegal behavior and 3,000 lies over 4 years. So you're going to have a bunch of Republican candidates that are going to end up canceling each other out. And what that ends up doing then is making Trump the nominee. And there's some people who are saying that this is part of the design, that Nikki Haley running for president is actually sort of a, I guess you would say, Trojan horse. It's specifically designed to put Trump back in the White House, or at least make him the nominee. But then at the same time, her speech yesterday, she says, we want to move past stale ideas and faded names of the past. I wonder who that could be. But it's going to be heating up soon. And then one more political issue here. Have you seen this derailment of this train right on the Ohio-Pennsylvania border? And it's got, what is it, vinyl chloride? Is that what it's called? Anyhow, it's really, really bad stuff when it is used improperly or when it starts leaking out of a train. So they're like, oh, this is really a disaster. And there's a town right there. And so they said, okay, well, we have to do, this thing could blow sky high. What we're going to have to do is what they call a controlled burn. So they said all these chemicals are in there. We're actually going to accelerate the burning process. And all of a sudden the thing goes about, you know, 100, 200 feet in the air. And there's black clouds and dust and stuff all over the place. And they tell people to evacuate. But then they said, no, it's safe. You can come on back to your houses. And as people came back to their houses, they started talking about skin irritation and coughing and feeling nauseous. And oh, by the way, look at our creek where they counted 3,500 dead fish. Also, some of the wildlife has gone down. But they have told people, no, no, you can go back to your houses. And this is where government gets the bad rap. Because all you got to do is go back to 9/11 and Christy Todd Whitman. Christy Todd Whitman, you know, she was in charge of the EPA. And after 9/11, she tells everybody, nah, you can go back. You can go back to ground zero if you're volunteering to work with the firemen and all that sort of stuff. No, it's okay. You can be down there. Unfortunately, I don't think she even had any sort of medical background. And people were ending up breathing glass dust. They were, in essence, breathing in glass. Not to mention all the other materials that are involved in the construction process of a couple of high rises, and people are breathing that stuff in. And you know, if you've had the news on, or if you picked up a paper anytime in the last 20 years, you know that all those firefighters, all those first responders, all those volunteers, they're coming down with horrible illnesses, terrible illnesses from having ingested all that stuff. So the government doesn't exactly have a trustworthy record of telling people, no, it's all safe. You can go back. So you'd think that the government, the congressmen, the senators, all of the elected officials who could grab this thing by the horns and say, oh, you know, we want to take care of people here. This is, first of all, we want to do the right thing. But second of all, there's votes. There's votes. So let's get somebody in there and get this thing cleaned up, get these people out of there, Let them know that it is not safe to go back. Let's really grab this thing, own it, and then let's stand back and be rightfully proud of ourselves. So that's exactly what they did. Ha! I'm just kidding. Here's what they're all talking about.
You may have collaborated with U.S. intelligence community regarding stories that y'all didn't want the public to see. So namely, what we refer to as the Hunter Biden laptop story.
Hunter Biden's lawyers, as recently as last week, wrote the Department of Justice about Hunter Biden's laptop.
The substance of Hunter Biden's laptop story.
FBI subpoenaed Hunter Biden's laptop.
Regarding Hunter Biden's laptop.
Hunter Biden's laptop.
Hunter Biden 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 laptop.
Maybe Hunter Biden's laptop is the GOP's safe word. They're repeating it. Like an undercover cop who's in danger? Hey, what are you talking about? I'm not a cop. I'm a drug dealer, just like you. Hunter's laptop. Hunter's laptop. Hunter's laptop. Get me out of here. Hunter Biden's laptop.
Repeat after me. We get the government we deserve. It was on this date in 2017. I had my rotator cuff surgery. Jeez. God, I had no idea it was going to be such a brutal rehabilitation. But I was told by people who have had rotator cuff surgery, they're like, do more than they're asking you to do in the physical therapy. And so I did, but I could not sit in a chair and put pressure on the right side of my shoulder blade, you know, my right side of my back, for it had to be 9 months. But I did the rehab. I got very serious about it. And I went out the following summer and I went 4-0 out on the mound. So it can be done. And in 2009, I had my first colonoscopy. You got to be really, really careful for the first few hours after you have a colonoscopy, you know, because you haven't been able to eat anything for 24 hours. You've just been guzzling that crap with the, I can't even look at blue Gatorade anymore because I said, okay, what is the flavor of Gatorade that I probably could do without? The blue stuff. All right, pour the powder in. You got to keep drinking that powder and you just live on the toilet for about 12 hours. But then you go in, when you do your colonoscopy, they can see everything. So you come out, they're going, yeah, you're clean as a whistle, everything's fine, great. They're like, oh, I'm so starved, man. I haven't eaten in 24 hours. Let me go grab a Lion's Choice. That Lion's Choice went through me in about 15 seconds. I'm like chewing away going, man, go, uh-oh, and off you go. Just be prepared for that because, let's just put it this way, I wasn't.
I don't like getting older. It doesn't seem quite fair. Your memory fades. You need a hearing aid. And you lose your hair. I don't have lots of courage. I know myself, no doubt. But my gastroenterologist knows me inside out. And for a modest fee, a colonoscopy opened up a whole new world. It's an apprehensive moment when the doctor asks you to bend. It's a long, long tunnel, but I see the light at the end.
Was in New York on this date in 1996, interviewing Robin Williams, Nathan Lane, Gene Hackman, Calista Flockhart for a movie called The Birdcage. They didn't give us Mike Nichols, the director. That's the guy I wanted to meet. I was in Cozumel on this date in 2000, and I was supposed to go back to Chicago on this date in 2001 for my 30th high school reunion, and the more I thought about it, I decided I better not go because there were one guy in particular that was a Nazi. And again, this is unusual because it's an all-boys Catholic high school, and he got a Nazi. And he didn't, yeah, I mean, he was proud of it. And I got into it with him a couple of times over this Nazi stuff. And then he, like the year after that, really seriously, and I'm not kidding around here, tried to, he was involved in some vandalism of our house that was designed to really hurt us. And he did it more than once. And I'm just thinking to myself, if he's there and I see him, I don't know if I will, but I know I'm capable of killing him with my bare hands. So I decided to just back off of that. Never went, which is probably a good thing anyhow, because then they would have started begging me for money. All right, birthdays today. Elizabeth Olsen, 34. Jerome Bettis, the bus. Played with the Rams for a while. It says here, retired Pittsburgh Steelers running back. They don't even remember when he was with the Rams. He's 51 today. John McEnroe, 64. Ice-T, 65. LeVar Burton, 66. William Catt, the greatest American hero. He was also in Carrie back in 1976. And in one of those movies, it was one of the first movies I think I ever saw when I got HBO back in the early 1980s. And it was a movie called First Love with Susan Day. And it was a really, really well-made little movie about this love affair in college between William Catt and Susan Day. And it was extremely well-written, and there were surprises, and the ending didn't turn out probably the way you thought it was going to. Also, it was the first time most people saw Beverly D'Angelo in a movie. And yes, she did quit the grinning and drop the linen. So there were a lot of things to like about that movie. I don't know how it would hold up today. There was also a character in there. It was almost like a Professor Kingsfield thing from The Paper Chase. But I, you know, that's what's interesting. I'm going to see if that movie is still around. I think I'd like to see it again. It's called First Love. But you also have to remember, this was, what, 40 years ago? And they have Laurie Partridge in the movie in a very frank, open, graphic discussion of jizz. That certainly got my attention back in the early 1980s. I'll tell you that. And border officials say enough fentanyl has been seized on the border so far this year that it could kill the United States population five times over. Or, you know, Keith Richards once. And with that, the Tracy Corcoran Podcast for Thursday, February 16th, 2023 is in the can. 42 days now until opening day. We're here every weekday morning. We publish now at 11 a.m. Still waiting for the go-ahead call on the new radio station. Every time the phone rings, I jump about a foot and a half because I know it's close. We'll let you know when it's here. And in the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.